The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to see you all on this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Don.
Obviously, I guess the big financial news this past week has been coming from south of the border, which is probably good. But we're seeing banks that are having tough times, some going under, some freezing funds, what have you. And Canadians are concerned that this could spread not only in the U.S. because whatever they do affects us, but could also happen up here. But we've got a much different system here, don't we?
No, from a buffer standpoint, the reserves that the Canadian banks have to keep to protect us, they were actually shoring this up with the higher interest rates also, just in case people start defaulting on loans. So we've been ahead of the curve, and just our conservative nature and the rules to the banks is a little bit more conservative. And yeah, it makes everybody aware what's going on. And these interest rates have an impact because, you know, if you put your money in long-term bonds, those bonds could be down 10 to 20%. Because of interest rates rising. And this is what's happening to the banks. They think they're being safe. They got a reserve, but the reserve has gone down in value. So they had to have funds into that reserve. And then, of course, human nature, as soon as they smell blood, they want to take the money out really quick. And that only adds fuel to the fire. So Canadian banks are on far better footing. And when thankfully, we've never had an issue like that. Even going back to the financial crisis in 08, 09, Canadian banks were considered the safest place in the world at that time.
And it's interesting because many remember that in 08, 09 and the issues that happened in the United States and mortgage rates and so on. And I think many thought that that was behind them and that they had corrected that, but clearly not the case.
Yeah. This doubling of interest rates in a short period of time, like what has happened. I don't know. Nobody predicted this. And so, yes, it's affected some of these. And again, look at the U.S., how fragmented their banking system is. Like most people would have never even heard of this bank.
Yeah, so, the regional.
It's so regional. And so Canadian banks, they're, you know, we have our six large banks. And then a lot, even our small banks are quite well funded.
All right. Yeah,
you make a good point, Don, but just about the SVB bank or SVB bank, we didn't have exposure necessarily from our banking standpoint, but then a lot of our clients were wondering, or a lot of listeners may be wondering, you know, what was their exposure in their portfolios, right? Did we own this bank? You know, a lot of people have U.S. funds, have U.S. mutual funds or ETFs in the U.S. So looking at our clients' perspective, we had very little exposure, if none at all, to this bank. But there were some investments out there that did have exposure to it. So yeah, just wouldn't hurt to look or talk to your advisor and see if you've got exposure to it or not.
And at the end of the day, that's why we diversify too.
Yeah.
You know, it's far better to have 100 companies. And if one happens to get into trouble, you still got 99 to hold up your portfolio.
All right. Yep. So Jay wants to start us on a real uplifting. Get your tea and your crumpets ready. Here it comes. What happens when we die? Now, are we talking about finances still here, Jay? What direction?
Yeah, we're talking a little bit about finances, but right. You know, it's funny. During the last couple of weeks, Don and I have been running around with RSP season and sitting down with clients and going through those comprehensive plans with our clients, things have brought to our attention. And a lot of people don't have their wills. And some of our clients that we've been nagging for years and years either have come to us in the last little while and said, Jay, finally, I've got my will done. You'd be so proud of me. And, you know, only asking them for 10 years to get it done and they finally got it done. But a lot of people don't have wills. In Canada, over 41% of married couples don't have wills and over 56% of singles don't have wills. So let's call it 50% of our population doesn't have a will. So when you die without a will, it's called intestate, and your wishes are not necessarily followed the way you want them to be followed. The government steps in and they're governed by the provincial rules. So you may have wishes what you want to happen to your estate, but if you don't have a will, that doesn't happen. The government decides how that's going to be distributed. Most times it goes to the surviving spouse, but if you don't have a surviving spouse, then it gets a little bit messy. So you really want to make sure for single people, for sure, you want to make sure you got your wills and power of attorney in place, but even for married people with kids and assets, you want to make sure that's in place. So like I said, during RSP season, we had a lot of people come in, a lot of meetings going through plans. And there's a couple scenarios that I want to go through that people brought to my attention that I thought that listeners would find entertaining as well as thought provoking. So I had this one couple come into my office, and her mother just passed away not too long ago. Now, if I can dial it back, she bought a house beside her mother and father about 40 years prior. So when they got married, they bought the house next door to their mom and dad. Her sister still lived at home. Father passes away, 20 years ago. One daughter is still living at home. The other daughter lives next door, raises her family. The daughter at home never ends up having children and ends up taking care of her elderly mom, excuse me, in the late years. And then the mom thought she was doing the right thing once her dad passed away to say, okay, you know what? I'll give all the assets to the one daughter that lives next door, and I'll give the house to the daughter that's living in the house. And at the time, those assets were relatively the same. And the mother thought, well, my investments will grow similar to what my house will grow to. So it seems fair. And that way it's clean, and the daughter that's living at home gets the house. Well, fast forward again, 20 years, mother passes away. And she's almost exhausted all of those investments that she had. So all the RSPs are almost gone. TFSAs, there is very little. And bank accounts, there was very little. So she had lived a good long life and spent most of her money during her lifetime. But she had this $1 million house that in her will she had deemed to give to the daughter. So mom passes away. They bring out the will. And the one daughter inherits this $1 million house, and the other daughter inherits about $50 in the bank account or something like that. I'm being facetious, but yeah. So now the one daughter says, well, that's not fair. You know, mom wanted us to get equal share, and that's when it was done. And the one daughter says, well, no, this is what mom wanted. I took care of her in the last number of years, so this is what she wants. So now daughter one lives next door with her family. Daughter two lives in the other house, and they don't talk.
Oh my.
And this was a loving family, a good solid family that they live next door, and they had family dinners together every Sunday. And then mom passes away, and now no one talks to each other. So, you know, putting a will in place and making sure that you've identified exactly what's supposed to be happening, it's good to revisit that will every 4 or 5 years just to see that make sure that things are going the way they're supposed to. So,
hey, yeah. Hey Don, this makes my story look like, a choir, doesn't it? This is hilarious. This is unbelievable, Jay, because as I was saying to Don off air, I was together with friends over the weekend who I've known since high school. So it's a bunch of old people all together, and we're all having these exact same stories. And it's like everyone has a tale. It's amazing how common this is.
Yeah. And it's not a tale because, you know, every meeting we have, if you dig deep enough, you come across these things. Like you said, at your very entertaining dinner parties that you seem to be having, Scott, talking about wills and estates. Maybe the show's rubbing off on you. I don't know.
Who am I to talk about your topic choices? Look at my dinner guests. Holy smokes. I got to rethink all this.
They used to have hair, you know, so
yes.
Everybody's changed and the hair wasn't gray. So yeah, yeah. Time moves on. But you know what? And there's certain things, and you hit the nail on the head here, Jay. It's about revisiting. It may not have been 50-50, may not have been the right call either, because maybe there's a lot of support that one daughter was giving to their mother because they were living together. So equal is not necessarily fair.
Right.
You have to look at the situation, and we go through this all the time. And part of our job as a financial planner, holistic financial planner, is to look at the overall picture and say, okay, let's bring out the wills. And is this really what you want? So we do this on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and a solution to this would have been if they wanted it to be 50-50, they could have just left the entire estate 50-50 as opposed to deeming certain assets or certain property. Or so putting in actual assets or account numbers or dollar values is a no-no in a will. You want to make sure that you just say, you know, equal split 50-50. And then what you do is you'd set up a trust agreement to accompany that will. So if you wanted the daughter to live in that house still and remain in the house and not be, you know, kicked out if she had to liquidate the house because she has to pay off her other sister or the sister or the other daughter, you know, you can have a trust agreement put in place where you can say, okay, well, the daughter that lives in the house can live there for up to 3 years and figure out some kind of financing options or sell the house. So you can have all kinds of different arrangements, however you want to word it in that trust agreement that accompanies your will. So I think it's definitely something that, you know, a lot of clients don't necessarily look at and say, well, I just wanted to go 50-50. And then they don't actually work it out and say, well, okay, how are they going to actually fund that at that point in time? How are they going to buy that other person out? You know, if they don't have the means to do so, how do you do it? So if you don't want them, you know, the one daughter selling the house under your feet, you know, as soon as mom passes away, you want to make sure that you have something in place. And a trust agreement's great way to do that. And you can also include...
Another thing that really complicates this too, Jay, is that if there are mixed marriages, if there's, you know, if the person has married a couple of times and has various dependents or even a small business and a partner, boy, there's a lot of deep water here you got to negotiate through.
No, that's a great segue. Go ahead, Don. Sorry.
Blended families add a whole new layer of complications to it. And again, like Jay, you're saying about a trust agreement, we've actually recommended this with blended families. Saying, and again, and that will gets changed as a relationship gets stronger, just to make sure there's no gold digger there. And you know, you put their assets together, and then your situation, it could have been a 3-year trust, or it could have been a lifetime. They get to live in that house as long as they live, but again, at the time of death, it goes to the other daughter, or maybe, you know, their kids. So, you know, there's lots of ways to cut it, but it's about what makes the most fairness. It doesn't have to be 50-50. It's what contributions did that person have to their life? And there's a lot of factors, and it's just opinion. And money is money's emotional. So it's really getting this all out on the table, and transparency is key.
Well, it's an amazing, you know what, I was going to talk about a different topic in the next segment, but I'm going to carry on with this topic in the next segment. But, you know, it's really interesting to see how, you know, even the contents of your home, what's valuable to some people, what's not valuable to some others, right? So, oh, mom wants me to have the china. Well, I don't want the china, right? Or whatever it is. So that trust agreement, you can put in there, you know, the contents of your home, jewelry, shoes, clothes, collections, whatever you want to put in there, and make sure that that trust agreement is said, okay, here's what we want exactly to happen. We don't want this going to Uncle Bob or Uncle Jim because we don't like him anymore, whatever the case may be. But you can really put your wishes and be very finite on what you want to do. You know, we've heard stories in the past about people putting stickers on items in the house and saying, well, that's for Joe and that's for Mary. And yeah. And if you have a trust agreement, there's no switching of the stickers.
Well, yeah, really. Someone's been peeling the tape off, as I can tell. Well, who would have
anyways, the bottom line is that you know, you want to sit down and make sure that your advisor is going through the will with you, and not just your lawyer, but your advisor needs to go through that will with you and make sure that everything's in order in the event of an event of a death.
Well, who would have thunk that what happens when we die would be such a great topic that we're going to carry it over to the next segment? Stay tuned. We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Quick break. You don't want to miss the next one. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. In the first segment, we were talking
with Jay's choice of topic, which is what happens when we die. And it turned out to be a bit more informative than what we initially had poked Jay about. So we're going to continue it on. And this is fascinating because we're all talking off air. We've all had this conversation in the last week with friends. So continue on, Jay, about how important it is to have a will.
Yeah. So another client came into the office not too long ago, and his father recently passed away, and his father left 40%. He's got two kids. He left 40% to each kid and then left 10% to each of his grandchildren. So he's got two grandchildren. So father had substantial amount of money into his RSPs, almost $1 million in his RSPs. And he had deemed beneficiaries on those RSPs. So when you deem a beneficiary, those assets transfer to the beneficiary directly. So in the case of RSPs, when not transferring to a spouse, but to kids, taxes are payable on those assets. So he had $1 million in RSPs. The estate is faced with a $500,000 tax bill. And then the beneficiaries receive that $1 million. So they get $500,000 each. So they thought that was great. They're avoiding probate. It was the right thing to do to name beneficiaries on the RSPs. However, he had a house worth about $500,000. So they liquidate the house, or sorry, about $600,000 after taxes, or sorry, after real estate fees, legal bills, all that kind of stuff. The net estate, because they had a $500,000 tax bill from the RSPs, was about $100,000. Leaving $100,000 to be split between the two kids and the grandkids. So the grandkids thought they were going to be getting $150,000, 10% of the $1.5 million estate. And it turns out they're going to get about $10,000 because the tax bill. And so the tax bill goes over to the estate, and then the estate is settled. So they were getting 10% of whatever the net estate was. The RSPs didn't flow through the estate. So the grandkids thought they're getting $150,000. They end up getting $10,000 each. And then the kicker was that the grandkids are for the one adult child, or the surviving child. The other didn't have any kids. So now the one survivor says, well, my kids were supposed to get $150,000. And she's like, well, I don't have any kids, so it doesn't really matter to me. And so they're fighting now because he thinks the kids should be getting $150,000 of this money. And that's what his dad wanted to happen. And now they're getting $10,000. So now there's a family squabble over this, and the brother and sister aren't talking. So very similar to our other story, a simple gesture in a will to make sure that it's done right, or to review that will, or sit down with your financial planner and say, okay, what is my estate actually going to look like? So, you know, Don and I run these programs where we actually look at what the estate's going to look like. What's the net estate going to be? And then, you know, if there's taxes that are going to be payable on this estate, you need to consider that, because a lot of people don't. And it's really disheartening to see that, you know, you work your whole life, you save all this money, and you amass $1.5 million, and you think you're going to give it to your grandkids, and it's the right thing to do, and it doesn't happen when you're gone. So it's very sad, very sad.
There's one thing to have that happen with siblings or members of your family. It's another thing to lose it all to the tax man. Holy smokes.
Awful.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of interesting, Jay, all these stories, it's like they all have a common theme. They might have, you know, different circumstances, but they all have the same conclusion. The conclusion is my sister and I are never talking again.
Yeah.
You know, or my brother and I, we just don't talk. And that's what ends up happening, because they didn't sit down and do a proper estate plan. And for the listeners out there, this is what we've said so many times. Do you have a financial advisor, or do you have a financial planner? And does that financial planner have a CFP? A certified financial planner is going to go over all this stuff to make sure that you don't have these circumstances right come across down the road. So yeah, extremely important to look at the big holistic picture. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. Day by day, we don't talk about every single meeting about your estate plan, but mm-hmm. we should always have, we do check the boxes, and we have a really good idea of what's going on. In fact, I had a client just last week saying, you know what's so great is when we call, is that we're not a number. We know who you are. You know, your assistant knows who I am. You always know the situation. I said, absolutely. We know everything about you. And it's funny, you know, talking about an estate issue there too. And so we knew going into the conversation, oh yeah, this is, oh, I remember you telling me about that. So again, it comes down to a relationship, and a trusted advisor is extremely important. Mm-hmm. So had your clients had this brochure, Jay, it would have been a lot better. It's called Plan for Memories Today and Leave a Legacy for Tomorrow. And basically it's a guide to help you start the wealth transfer conversation. And transparency and having this plan would have negated all these issues that you've been talking about, because it would have been out in the open. And really, it's having that main reason is the main reason for all these problems. Number one reason is lack of communication and yeah. not talking about it. And just and in some cases, just thinking everything was done properly. I have a will. Don't need to look at it anymore. So,
well, it's almost taboo, right? It's almost taboo for you to bring it up at a family discussion, because it gets people really agitated or gets people feeling uncomfortable if you bring it up at a family discussion. So bringing it up in front of a financial planner and having that meeting and having a mediator basically as the advisor, I think that's a great system. Bringing your parents into a meeting, if your parents aren't clients, bring them into the meeting and say, hey, what's going on here? What do we need to do to get this straightened out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you talked about, we don't want to talk about what happens when we die as a segment for the show. Who the heck wants to have that conversation around the dinner table?
Yeah. No, for sure.
It doesn't get better. Okay. Yeah. It's far better.
No, it doesn't.
In a regulated situation where everybody's around. And like Jay said, it's a mediator. And right in this guide, it says, include your children and grandchildren in the process. Involving young children and grandchildren early will teach them critical financial literacy lessons, so they're better prepared to manage the inheritance.
That's a great idea.
So important. And 70% of affluent Canadians leaving an inheritance is basically what they expect, but only 57 say they're actually reasonably prepared. So call it 50% of these wealthy people are prepared. And Jay said that earlier, about half the people have a will. So yeah. There's actually estimated 1.1 and get this trillion dollars are set to exchange hands across all the generations by 2026, which is only 3 years away.
Hmm.
So these conversations, and again, yours is on the weekend, Scott, we're all these, us boomers are getting there, and we're having these conversations, right? Because now we're around 60 and mm-hmm. or older, and the boomers, and our parents are all in their 80s, and they're at that stage. And this is why we're having these conversations right now. So, you know, key considerations to help shape your legacy is clearly define the legacy planning, what it means to you. So you sit down and talk and say, what do you really want to accomplish here? Okay. And have these. And again, that's kind of a soft meeting. It's not simply just numbers in this case. It's just trying to find out what they really want to accomplish and make sure that the estate is passed in the most tax effective manner. Now that is something Jay and I and our whole team, we talk about at every meeting. How do you make this as efficient as possible when transferring wealth and making sure, as you mentioned, Scott, the tax man doesn't get more than their share.
Yeah.
Okay. And we found many times where, you know, clients were cut off their nose, spite their face, so to speak. They mm-hmm. will transfer the ownership of a house so they can avoid probate. Oh, that's great. So they moved this $250,000 home into their kids' names, lived there. The house is now worth $1 million. Now there's a capital gain to pay. They would have mm-hmm. far rather have kept that in the mother or father's name and paid the tax. Paid the probate tax, but right. not the capital gains. Way worse. But again, these are all, the problem is they're talking to people and it's hearsay, or they read an article that doesn't really apply to them. Hmm. And they're now saying, okay, we understand it. Speak to a CFP. This is where a lot of the mistakes happen. And, you know, taking care of special assets like a family business and vacation properties. And I can't tell you how important that cottage discussion is. Okay. One of the most emotional assets going, because what is a cottage? It is a memory of all the fun you had with your kids when they're growing up and grandkids. And that's what it represents. And how do you pass that legacy on? Well, first thing is, do they really want it? Okay. And have that conversation. And what's the tax bill going to be on this thing? Because it's gone up in value quite a lot, or I'm sure over the years. And how's that tax going to get paid? Are you going to steal from Peter to pay Paul? And literally, that's brothers and brothers there, so to speak. And so you end up leaving the cottage to one sibling, which happened to me last year. And the other brother didn't get anything. They had the assets, and it's a very similar to Jay's situation. They had their investments, but they had whittled down by the time they passed away, and the cottage was left to the other person. Very similar situation as Jay was experiencing. So insurance might be an answer. Life insurance is often one way to leave money to one, the one that doesn't want the cottage, and the other one gets the cottage. And so this will allow, you know, the taxes to be paid, et cetera. So again, going through a proper plan is we can't say it enough times, right? Mm-hmm. Address personal items with sentimental value. And I know I can go back to, you know, my mother's situation when her mother passed away or my grandmother passed away. All she cared about was a ring. That was it. And they talked about it all the time. It turned out she didn't get it. And that's it. It was all about the ring. And funny enough, Scott, on the weekend, I had this conversation. And this person's wife, when her mother passed away, all it was about the wedding ring going to the granddaughter. It didn't end up going there. And the conversation was always there, but it wasn't put in writing. And this is what matters. It's what's put down in writing, even though you had the intention to do it. Unfortunately, good intentions literally die upon the death of the person if it's not in writing.
It's interesting you should say, and you guys have been talking all morning about you know, making sure that the value is adjusted and these things are equal, even though they're all different. I was heard about a scenario over the weekend, second, third marriage, one person much older than the other. And they've been living off his money and his estate, and he's getting up there. He's over 90 now, and most of his money has been burned up. So it just now she can live off of her money and in her past life and whatever, but the inheritance to the kids is virtually nothing. And this is a reasonably well-to-do family. So it's like, it's bizarre how just a marriage, a second or third marriage, can just turn this whole thing upside down.
Yeah, we have a great example of that not too long ago where you've got two, you know, second marriage or third marriage or whatever it is. And what you do is you set the property up, let's say the house, you set that up as tenants in common or joint tenants, depending on how you want to structure it. But so if you pass away, the house goes to the other spouse, but then in your will, both of you, not just a trust agreement would work, but your will, what you could do is deem that all the other kids split that estate from that point forward. So, you know, just dial it back a bit. If you've got two split families, so second marriage, and someone inherits the house and then they die a month later, only their estate's going to receive the benefit of that if they haven't willed in the other kids or the other grandkids or whatever the case may be. So you want to make sure that the wills are adjusted. Once you amalgamate that those two families, you've got to adjust your will accordingly or set up a trust agreement. So I've talked about the trust agreement before, but can't stress it enough that especially when you have a blended family, you want to make sure there's a trust agreement or change the wills for sure.
And what can also happen is these results can greatly change if the order of them passing away changes. For example, if he passes away first versus her, the results are very, very different. And a lot of people don't realize that unless the I's have been dotted and the T's crossed.
Yeah. And we definitely look at both sides. And that's a great point, because there's not just because one spouse is older than the other doesn't mean that's the order. It's likely the order, but it doesn't mean it happens that way. So, yeah, you know what? It's kind of interesting. The worst scenario, though, is when the beneficiaries are counting on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're counting on it for their own retirement plan.
Yes.
And that's the worst, because we always, when we create a retirement plan, the moral of the story, so to speak, is create your own financial independence. Right. Okay. Do it yourself and consider an inheritance a bonus. And if you look at it that way, it's certainly a lot less stressful. Okay. And you'll have, and if it does happen to be some shenanigans going on, you'll also have the money to take them to court.
Good point.
So, but yeah, talking about trust, when you're leaving wills, going to, you know, the kids. Well, if there's a sizable amount of money, and these days, you know, look at the price of houses, you know, having a $2 million home is not absurd anymore. It's still a very high value home.
Yeah.
But split between two kids, that's $1 million each. If you don't specify an age in the will, you imagine some kid at 18 getting $1 million right now?
Great Woo-hoo. Point. Great point. Okay. Yep.
And we always recommend, okay, maybe graduate, you know, maybe they get something for school, maybe in trust until they're 25. And quite frankly, we've seen some wills where we looked at so much at 25, so much at 30, and even so much at 35. And this also protects against if they become married or common law, and because you don't really want your estate to go to an ex-spouse. Okay. Mm. So, and then also one last thing on the will is, what about charitable giving? You know, and we talk about it again, and intentions are all good, but let's put it in place. So if you really are, and that's important to you. So this comes in the first conversation. Where does this play a role? And should you give more now? Could you create a foundation while you're alive? Or do you put it in your will, I would like to leave X amount of assets to whatever great charity that you would like to leave it to. And that's also part of the tax plan too. So it's, you know, it fulfills your need that you would feel at peace if X amount of dollars goes to a certain charity. Again, everybody's different, okay? But for a lot of people, this is extremely important. And so that we look at that avenue too and set this up properly when you can actually do it. So again, all these things, it all comes down to have a full, total, holistic financial plan.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management, 905-972-7420. Another quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here along with Jay Llewellyn from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right. It was quite a lengthy couple of breaks there on the one segment, but it's pretty important on wills. And we should stress that if anybody wants any of this information, what do we need to do to get it from you guys?
Simply email us or give us a call, and we will send this wealth transfer guide, a soft copy. We'll just email it to you. It's a very informative. So certainly don't feel free to reach out.
And again, we can't stress enough of how common this all is. As you said, Don, the stories are different, but the end is the same. All right, well, let's move on. Savers and or borrowers market. Which is it, Jay?
Yeah. So, you know, interest rates are the flavor of the week that just passed. The Bank of Canada just came out last week and they stabilized rates for the time being. And experts are saying that a drop is coming, not saying when it's going to come. But, you know, the recent the collapse of that bank in the States is kind of spurred things, I think. And it may accelerate how fast they drop rates.
Really?
So, yeah, I think so. It might be. So it just Don and I are the eternal optimists with our occupation. We have to be optimists. And we realize that interest rates aren't going to stay the way they are forever, but they're steady right now at 4.5%. April 12th is the next update.
Jay, that actually we're just realists.
Well, you know what? That's my notes here. That's exactly what it says. We're eternal optimists, but we're also realists. So April 12th, the next prediction comes out, or the next announcement comes out. So to make a prediction today of what's going to happen, we don't know. There's so many factors that play a role. I'm just going to go through what factors actually play a role from a broad perspective. There's lots of factors that the Bank of Canada comes up with, whether he wakes up on the right side of the bed or not, or is another reason. But the four factors that really come into play, whether they're going to adjust interest rates or not. Number one is inflation. So that's a flavor of the month as well. A lot of people are very aware of what's going on with inflation. The cost of goods has gone up. So people are aware. So that's the number one component of why the Bank of Canada is moving the rate up and down. January, we were at 5.9%. That was down from 6.3% in December. And then at the high, we were at 8.1% in June. So with the government reducing the rates or stabilizing the rates, they were raising rates to get inflation under control. And now that we're seeing inflation come down the other way, they're kind of holding pace for the time being to see what's going to happen with inflation. So their ideal target is 2 to 3%. February number will be released on March 21st. So if you want to get a little head start on what's going on or how the Bank of Canada is reacting, on March 21st, they come out with the new inflation rate, and that'll give you a better look or a closer eye on what's going on or what the Bank of Canada is doing. The unemployment rate. Unemployment, it causes a lot of stress on the environment or on the economy. Right now it's at 5% unemployment, which some people are saying that's zero unemployment based on people not working or people that could be working that just decide not to work. So jobless rate, as that increases, this shows a weakening of the economy, and lower rates generally follow with that. So if you're watching the employment rate as well, that's something that you can keep an eye on just to see what's going to go on with interest rates. Wages, that's the other or the third thing that comes up. So they go hand in hand with inflation usually. So as wages increase, so last year over year, January to January, we're looking at a 4.5% year over year raise in wages. This is a pro for employees, not so much for employers, but puts money in the pockets of these employees. So you've got a wage raise. That means they're spending more money. Most Canadians spend what they make. Don and I, again, sitting down with clients all the time, you get a raise and you spend it. It's the same thing. If your wages have gone up 4.5%, inflation's come into play. So you've got to spend that money anyway. It's not that you're just spending it willy-nilly, but you've got to spend more money. So just the fact that wages have gone up that much is just not even covering inflation at this point. So back in November, wages were up 5.8% year over year. So more a rise in wages generally increases inflation. So as wages start to come down, or as they're not increasing as much, less money is being spent, which will also hopefully reduce inflation, reducing those interest rates. So again, put yourself ahead of the curve a little bit. And if you can see what's going on with inflation, unemployment rate and wages, you can get a good idea what's going to happen with the interest rate. The other thing is GDP. This is based on our economic output for our country. So gross domestic product is what it stands for. In the last quarter of 2022, it was left unchanged. So if GDP is going up, it so shows the signs of the economy doing well. Employment is increasing because if the economy is doing well, businesses are doing well, they've got more supply that they've got to put into the market. So they're hiring more people or they're increasing output. So as they hire more, the demands for these employers to put more product out, they've got to hire more people, maybe increase wages, putting more money in the pocket of Canadians, which is enabling them to spend more, which is also increasing inflation. So all of those factors put together, each one of them has their element of decision of how the Bank of Canada raises or doesn't raise. But these four factors give you a good glimpse of how the Bank of Canada looks into their crystal ball and figures out what they're going to do with the interest rates. So if I'm going to give my prediction of what's going to go on in the interest rates, it's completely random because I don't know what the results of those four factors are, but I said it's going to change in the near future. Well, Don, what do you think?
Wow. Or it could be no change.
Well, oh, no, I said it's going to change. I say it's going to change.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That's pretty good. What the heck? What more do you need?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management, 905-972-7420. Another break here, and we're back for our last segment. Hang on.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Don, we've talked about this many times, and I guess every situation's different, but your Canada Pension Plan, when do you take it? Early, late? Do you invest it? What do you do?
You know what? And there was a great article not long ago on the Globe, suggesting should you take the CPP out early and invest it? And it went through a lot of the details and a lot of things, like you said, Scott, we have talked about over the years. But again, it seems to be that there's still so much misinformation and almost peer pressure on this topic when they're talking to friends and colleagues. And it's almost like take it out early. And it's almost like there's a party going on. It's a club. You want to take it out early and spend it and enjoy life. And you know, and that may be the answer. But again, it's usually not done with a pen and paper to decide should you take it or shouldn't you take it. And that's what, you know, Jay and I and our whole team do. Does it make sense to take it early or not? And so interesting, the research shows that only 1%, actually less than 1%, wait till 70 to start taking out your Canada Pension Plan. And that is the latest you can defer it to. Now, you know, many choose to take the funds sooner because maybe they need the money. That actually is shows statistically like the poverty rate actually goes down at 60. So therefore, people are taking it out at 60 because they definitely need the money. But others say, well, maybe I won't live that long. And that might be the case. Maybe there's some limited lifespan and then makes sense to take it out earlier. Again, these are the types of things that we discuss. Others say, well, I can invest the money and do better. Maybe not. At the end of the day, it's really not always about the math. You have to also look at the risk tolerance. Should you take out the money and invest it? Well, if you are taking out the Canada Pension Plan, it is taxable. Okay, so you're paying tax on it. And a lot of these people considering taking it out at 60 are actually not, they're still working. And they could be paying a lot of income tax on this Canada Pension Plan. So there's another avenue. Well, then I can put it in my RSP. And that is true. That is another option. And work through those numbers because then you take out the Canada Pension Plan, you don't pay tax on it because it's going into the RSP. Well, then later on, you do have to pay the tax on that Canada Pension Plan, albeit it might be at a lower rate. But again, work out the calculations. So 60 is the earliest age that you can pull out the Canada Pension Plan and you will take a 36% hit. So if you were getting $1,000 a month at 65, you're going to get $640 a month at 60. Okay, so that's a fairly big hit in my opinion. And it is, by the way, the most popular choice by Canadians is to take it at 60.
Really?
Yes. And this is what... And this
Well, the majority of these people are still working. So they're in a higher tax bracket.
Right. Yeah. And this is a report, a 2020 report. So a very current report by the Toronto Metropolitan University National Institute of Aging and also Financial Planner, a Financial Planning Canadian Research Foundation. So... It's the average Canadian takes it at 60 versus waiting till age 70 can lose more than $100,000 of secure, worry-free retirement income that lasts for the rest of their life and keeps up with inflation, which is a big topic right now. As Jay was just talking with it, you know, with the interest rates, you know, been paused in Canada, the whole idea was to combat inflation, which was as high as 8.2%. Last year, I believe the Canada Pension Plan index rate was 6.4%. So that is helping. Now, how about your investments? How did they do last year? I can actually tell you, they probably didn't do well last year. And so those that were delaying their Canada Pension Plan, it's nice to have that worry-free, secure index pension. And I would liken it to a government pension that is an index pension, like the teachers or police officers or nurses, what have you, who have these pensions. It's not too dissimilar to that. So, and the interesting part is 2/3 of Canadians don't even realize that deferral is an option. Mm-hmm. For some people, they actually think they have to take it at 60 because so many of their friends that took it at 60. And then those at 65 didn't realize they can defer it till 70. So it's really interesting to kind of work through the numbers. So what I did actually is if you take it, say, well, 60 versus 65, the break-even point would be 74. Okay, so if you didn't invest it, you would get $640 a month versus waiting until 65 and got $1,000 a month. Now those are hypothetical. Right now you can get about $1,300 a month if you got the maximum at 65. But just as an example here, so if you saved all that money into just your bank account, pay the tax on it, Well, and again, I didn't even take tax into consideration. You'd have $38,400. Well, obviously, you're going to have less than that because you have to pay between 20 and 50% tax on that CPP. And so by investing it, you could also say, I'm going to put it into a tax-free savings account and I can make 6%. Well, again, you have to pay the tax, but assuming there was no tax, which is a terrible assumption, you'd end up with about $45,000. Well, it still works out that 81 is the break-even point. And I can guarantee it's not 81, it's less than that. Because even if you invest it, it would you have to pay tax on it. So you'd probably be about 76 is really the point here. But at the end of the day, it's the whole point of, will you be disciplined to put it away every month? Okay. And I, when you have 5 years to put that money away like a machine without ever being tempted to touching it, I would question that for two reasons. One is, if you say, I'll just put it in my TFSA, well, why didn't you put money in the TFSA before? Because generally speaking, those people aren't good savers in the first place. So these, a lot of the times, these are rationalizations rather than well thought through planning techniques that make sense for you. And so generally speaking, I like to look at all the avenues and what makes sense for not only you, but your spouse and the family, and looking forward as if you're going to live to 100. And that's the best idea as to, in terms of the bigger picture.
We have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn have been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. A pretty enlightening show, gentlemen, considering the topics of choice, but incredibly informative.
There you go.
Have a great week, everybody.
Have a great weekend.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.